Right in my face. Every time in the face.
Welcome, everybody, to Real Estate Makes Us Drink. Brian Quinlan here from Daniels Real Estate.
Brad Nickum with Ness Mortgage Crew.
Fantastic. We have another guest today. Let's let him introduce himself and tell us what you do.
I'm Carl McIntyre. I own Carrington Homes, and we are a custom home builder here in the Indianapolis area. We build on the 465 dial from about, I'm going to say about 9 o'clock all the way down to 6 o'clock. So we'll do Brownsburg, and then we'll go all the way down to South Meridian or Bargersville. So, yeah, been in business since 92.
That's awesome. All right. Well, before we get into it, cheers to you.
Cheers to you, my friend.
Cheers to you.
Cheers to you.
Cheers, Carl.
So what tequila did you bust out today?
Carita de Oro. Carita de Oro.
Okay.
Fantastic brand. It's a fairly new brand. By the time this comes out, I will have just shot the interview with the brand owner. Very traditional tequila. Their bottles are really cool looking. They got that nice.
It is. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So,
Hombre.
Another exciting, award-winning, traditional
award-winning.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I got a shirt, too.
Yeah, you do?
They sent a whole bar. Yeah, no additives. See that?
I must
they
say.
They sent a whole bar, like, shaker and...
Dude.
Oh, no. These guys are amazing. They're absolutely amazing.
But no extra large shirts for the tall guy?
That now has been added into the...
to the request packet?
In the request package. It's part of the... what do they call that packet you send out? Your promo marketing packet? Or...
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
We'll go with that.
We're so official here.
We super are. All right, so today I'm trying out Hart's Beer from Dyer, Indiana. Established in 2015, so they've been around forever. And, you know, how do we describe this? I don't know. Light-colored beer. Like all the rest.
Where is Dyer, Indiana?
Not near here. Well, Fred, can you tell us where Dyer, Indiana is, please?
Fred Nichols likes to comment on every show.
Oh, cool. I know Fred.
Yeah.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. He comes from what we call the Dumbass Acres group of partying. And that's just an HOA where Fred lives. And
yeah.
There we have the Pondapalooza party.
Pondapalooza.
I think I met you either at the Armstrong Christmas party or the Palooza.
Yeah. I agree.
Good friends with...
what's the name of that town? Dyer?
Dyer.
Yeah, D-Y-E-R. Oh, we're looking it up live on the show.
I think it's up north. That's my guess.
Hey, while he's doing that, what do you think of my hat?
Do you think that hat is amazing? That is my favorite hat.
Yeah, this was a Christmas gift from my man Brad, straight from Hawaii.
Yeah, you can only get the Olakai version of it in the Olakai store.
Well, I'm excited. I always like adding hats to the collection, so thanks, man.
Did you figure out the name of how to say it?
No.
The hat brand? It's on there. It's
right there.
Yeah, how you say that?
Is it Milan?
Man, you look weird without a hat on. Put that back on.
Milan, M-E-L-I-N? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really cool hat.
It's south side of Chicago.
Okay.
Dyer is essentially a suburb of Chicago.
Okay, so I knew it was up north, yeah. But I didn't
in the region, as they call it.
Yeah, a little close, too.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, it's right there.
Will you build me a house up there?
Sure. I'll build you a house anywhere.
Yeah, you will.
Now, remember the dial?
That's right. That is not 9 nor 6 o'clock on the dial.
Well, it'd be...
It'd be a... So.
I'm like 11.
It's closer to 12.
Yeah, about 11 or 12, yeah. But... 11:59.
Got that radius issue.
Yeah, that too.
And I don't believe that you're going to build something that's going to fit into that town's current home models.
Yep, that may be true.
Because I've seen your homes.
May be true, yeah.
Your homes are not the ones that have bars on the windows.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless you added
that. I don't know. An option, maybe.
Brownsburg areas are
hopefully
a bit
you don't
rough.
Need them, though.
Yeah,
hopefully you don't need them.
Exactly.
Right. So how did you get into home building? What's your like launch into where you are today?
I worked for, as a kid, I started when I was 16 working for Randy's Excavating in Greenfield, and I ran a shovel. So he ran the tractor, I ran the shovel. And then eventually I ran the bulldozer and backhoe. And so I was...
So you got all the big boy toys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I worked for him for about 8 summers, you know, through most of my high school, college. I did not go to college the first year out of high school. I worked for him. I was making like $12.50 an hour in like 1983.
You're making what a professor made.
But I somehow blew it really quick, you know, at 18 years old or whatever. So
because you were rich.
Yes. And so but I didn't stay rich.
Darn it.
So I ended up going to school and just worked for Randy in the summers, though. But it gave me a great understanding of how the foundation's put together, you know, the very first part. And then after college, I got a job as a superintendent building homes, you know. So I worked for Taylor Building Corporation out of Louisville and built houses. My first house was in Batesville, Indiana.
No kidding.
The second one was in Columbus, Indiana at the same time.
No. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Close.
You had to drive a lot to work for Taylor, but it was a good, good learning experience and just started, you know, going from there.
So what was your college degree?
Business management.
Okay.
So real general. I wouldn't be with you. I was a C student, you know, so a BC student.
Hey, that degree.
You know what they tell you, though?
What's that?
Yeah, I do.
The doctors and lawyers are the A students. The managers are the B students. And the owners are the C students because they couldn't get a job.
I was told just a little twist. A students teach B students to work for C students.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of true. If you kind of look around, you know, I've run into a lot of guys that are kind of that way. So who knows what it, but it's been good. We built our new office this year up at 104th. Well, it was a 30-year-old building, a really, really sweet guy. Pete Golmer owned an electrical contracting company. He built the building. I think it was in 90, actually. And it took me like 7 months to buy the building from him. It was not for sale. Kind of a neat story. A friend of mine said, man, a guy's 81 years old, still running his business. He's got to be willing to sell.
Yeah, he's got to be done soon.
And his wife was sick, so she wanted him to sell. And so I just happened to land there at the right time and let him keep an office there for a year. Because he was, how am I going to shut down my business? People count on me, you know?
Right.
So kind of the same dilemma that we'll all face.
Yeah.
So helped him through that, and it was just wonderful, man. And so then we renovated it, you know, remodeled and turned it into ours over the last year or so. And so, yeah, we just got it done pretty much right before Christmas. We had a Christmas party there. It was awesome.
Cool.
Very cool. Yeah, it was really fun. And I never had an office. I always rented, but I think it's a part of the retirement plan. I'll rent it to my own company, and we'll
here you go.
That's all right.
That's what Taylor Sheridan did. You know the Yellowstone guy?
Yeah.
You don't know the show Yellowstone?
Yes, but I don't watch the show.
Oh man, you got
okay. Every once in a while, you throw like these notches in the belt, and that's like this is a big one. Did you not like it?
I've never seen a minute of.
Don't then, because you'll watch them all. Well,
yeah, it's pretty good.
The Kevin Costner really kind of screwed him over and left the show, and that forced Sheridan to have to change a bunch of writing and delayed a bunch of things. So it forced him to purchase the 6666 ranch. So he actually owns that ranch.
I knew he owned it, but why did it? Why did that force him?
There was a timing frame that the leases were up, and then the filming wouldn't have been able to be done. And,
I got you.
And then he went to move into producing a spinoff from there. So he bought that and rents it back to Paramount for $50,000+ a day.
Wow. Okay.
And now they're shooting Landman on some of that. Yeah. If you haven't watched Landman.
I've heard of it.
Oh my gosh.
It's a good one, huh?
It's 10 times better than Yellowstone.
Oh, wow.
I've seen that.
Oh, even though Billy Bob Thornton wears women's jeans, he's still amazing.
At our house, we refer to Billy Bob as the chameleon. He can be so many different characters. Yeah. He's pretty impressive.
But you know the bad Santa character where he's just playing his true sarcastic self?
Yeah.
That's Landman times 10. I mean, he's just so good in it.
Okay.
That's nice.
So what was the jump to go to building the homes that you build today? Have you always built this ultra custom home, or did you build something in the middle first before you got to the luxury area that you are today?
No, you start out at what people like, you know. It took me about a year to sell the first house because I was a superintendent for another builder. But then when my parents actually helped me go on my own, I built them a house and then we used it as our model.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm pricing houses. We people come through and we're pricing stuff, but they're like, hey, you got anything you can show me? You know, another house.
Mom and dad, we're coming up.
Yeah. No, that was our model. Poor mom and dad. And then it's like, no.
It looks like you don't live there.
I'm like, no, you'll be the first, you know? And so that was tough. But we finally, and then when I sold one, I really got lucky. I sold like six. And plus 90, 2 was not the greatest economy in the world. It kind of was a little slow, you know. So when we started, it did take off a little better there in 92, 3, 4, you know. But I think 91 was a slight recession. And so things were a little bit slow. But once we sold one, I sold like 6. Boom, boom, boom. And so then we were rolling, you know.
So for you to sell homes back then, that means interest rates were like 3%?
No, no.
So interest rates were higher than they are today.
8.5.
Exactly.
Yeah. 9.
Yeah. When I got in 97, they were 8.5.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a perspective that people are out there going, oh, I want to wait to do something. Any of the people that you built homes for back then, none of those people could have ever lost money on their homes. Those homes today would sell for 3, 4, 5 times what you built them for.
Oh, for sure.
So that's like NVIDIA stock.
Yep.
So
I mean, that happened
quit waiting.
2020 and 2024, honestly. Like,
yeah.
you talk about rapid change, price escalation. That our pricing for our homes went up 45%.
Wow. But in today's increases over the last 5 years, probably even higher, aren't they?
It's like it's from worse 2020 to now, it's about 45%.
Oh, God. Yeah, from the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a good increase in the last 5 years. No.
I'm saying from 2020. To 2024, 45% increase in the cost of housing. From back in 92, I don't even know.
Right, yeah, it's way
thousands, thousands of percentage points, yeah. So I don't know what the difference is from then to now, but just in the last 4 years, the pricing went up more than it did in the prior 15.
Right.
Right?
Now, have you seen that level off now? As it came back,
yeah.
The supply chains
yeah.
have came back, we've
yeah.
seen a little leveling.
I mean, you just saw what happened, you know. They didn't go down enough. The stock market dropped, you know, Dow dropped 1,000 points.
Yeah,
I mean,
or was the market mad that they dropped it another quarter?
Cause only a quarter.
No, there's a lot of people that believe that if they would have done nothing at all, the market would actually be a little bit better. That that move.
What's the thought on that? I don't.
Well, so the real thing is, they're afraid the same thing's going to happen when Volcker did it and lowered the Fed fund rate before inflation was truly under control. And then we went into hyperinflation.
Right.
And what we've seen is inflation is leveled, right? It leveled. And then we lowered the Fed fund rate a half in September, which was more than what everybody thought they were going to. And we've seen inflation tick up every single month since. And instead of unemployment, which, you know, their mandate is unemployment and inflation, right? Unemployment was climbing. They lowered it a half. Unemployment stopped climbing and inflation has continued to climb. And now instead of 5 decreases in 2025, they're saying probably only 2. And there's a lot of economists right now that think they put the cart before the horse.
Got into a little, start dropping it too soon.
Yeah, because you're going to stimulate, right? The stimulated economy causes inflation to go higher, causes interest rates high.
Yeah, I feel it.
You have bad interest rates when you have a good economy, you have good interest rates when you have a bad economy. It's hard for us to sit around and hope for unemployment in a shit economy to have low rates. But
yeah. That's what it takes to get
to
drop the rate.
Right. So, and when they drop the Fed fund rate, it doesn't necessarily drop home mortgage rates, but it drops all of the things that you and I utilize, warehouse lines and lines of credit, things that we build on. So in that, how have the changes since 2008 and the way they do spec home lending to the way it's done today, has it really changed the way you build specs compared to how we did
development lending?
Okay.
Like on the development lending, I mean, you could almost, and spec homes too, or for my own homes, you know, they would, back in the day, I built houses for myself and it was like no money down, you know,
right.
You could just put your builder profit in there and that was your down payment kind of, right. And they looked at it that way and everybody was happy. And, and we paid them back, you know, so everything worked out for them too. So, but then after 08, all that changed, you know, like to do a development loan, it was kind of, you could get a development loan much easier back then and with a lot less money down. Like you might only need to put 15, 20 down now, like 35.
Wow.
You know, minimum. So you got to have like 35% on a development to get it going. So it takes a lot more cash. They want more skin in the game. Obviously for obvious reasons.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
They got stuck pretty hard. So. The development's tougher. You got to have more cash. The spec homes, you know, they'll do like 75% of your cost.
Okay.
So it's, yes, the same scenario. So I guess, sorry, I didn't mean to drag that out, but the answer.
No one's listening anyways.
The answer is.
We always joke we have tens of listeners.
That's right.
but we're always shocked. It was all of a sudden, well, that one got 100, 500 views. So it happens.
Yeah.
We never know.
But the the down payment, you know, the amount of money that you had to come to the table with increased in both cases for back homes, you know, model homes, land development, all the above.
So I know you have your hands in two areas. Mm-hmm. I know you understand how tract home building works, mm-hmm. and then I know you understand how custom home building works. And a lot of people don't know that difference. So our average buyer out there will call me and say, you know, hey, I want to build a custom home. And I always tell them that's a much more difficult process as a first-time home buyer than going, let's say, to Bridge North and buying a home in that neighborhood.
Yep.
So kind of explain what's the difference between going to a Bridge North and building what I consider as a semi-custom tract home.
Right.
And coming to you to build an actual custom home. Mm-hmm. What are the
difference? I think that I would call Bridge North a production home builder. You know, I don't really like the word tract. I mean, it's a tract of land, and then you build on it. So I guess
Production is,
because what they're doing, you know, in order to get the pricing down, like my pricing is over double Bridge North's per square foot, over double.
Wow.
And so that comes from there's a few different reasons for that. Obviously, the products that we put in our homes are more expensive.
Right.
You know, the flooring's more expensive. They're nicer appliances and all that. So that's part of that. Probably the biggest part is that. It's just nicer stuff, you know. But then a lot of it is to do with your production. Like I have 15 employees to build 10 homes a year. And they all work really hard, including myself, to accomplish that. So I liked it that you said ultra custom, because I think there's more than just custom and production. And there's it's like anything. There's varying degrees in between it, you know.
Yeah.
And so you
on
got,
both sides.
Yeah. You got all these individual builders. Like Bridge North is not as production as Lennar.
Right.
Lennar is going to be straight up. You can't move an outlet.
Well, right.
We're a smaller, more nimble company, obviously, with Bridge North. However, we're trying to take advantage of the same things that they do by having a streamlined process where you can build them quickly and efficiently and do the same thing. Like if I'm building your house and you come in and we just got done finishing the paint and you're like, man, Carl, I'd love to see a built-in right there. I'm sorry, but I just thought of it. I saw it on Pinterest or whatever.
Yeah,
it was on
my wife showed it to me
on Brian Quinlan's social media.
And I want it there, and it's like, no problem.
You're going to put it there.
If you're willing to wait, I always say it's physics and finances.
No,
if it's possible and you're willing to pay, and then, of course, there's time.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be, it takes longer to build
it. And at some
custom.
Point, it is too late in the process, I would imagine.
If you say, hey, man, you know what, I'm going to throw a match on this thing and start over, I'm your guy. I mean, we'll start, I'm here to work.
Yeah.
Right? So we're like fine dining waiters at the nicest restaurant in Indianapolis. And that's the experience that we try to deliver to our ultra custom clients, is that there's quite a few guys in this town that can build a big house and make it beautiful and do their very best to do good work, just like we do. Right. But, you know, where I say it's different is how you deliver it, man, and how you make them feel through the whole thing. It's more how our society is today, even in your business. You want to go get a loan. It's not just throw it down and give me the money. I mean, you got to make them feel good. You got to bring them a pretty present when it's over. If you really want to be competitive and compete in this world today, because people expect more, in my opinion.
Oh,
you know,
it's so true. A great bar doesn't deliver good drinks, and a great restaurant doesn't give you great food. Both of those things bring you an amazing service.
Right.
Experience.
It's the experience.
We talked about with our boy from Tony's.
Yeah, we had Ruben, the general manager of Tony's Steakhouse, right here.
I mean, it's just like this. If they were sitting here watching this podcast and this was just white behind us, it's not going to be as fun to watch as this. This is cool things to look at, and that's why you do it.
We could make it green and then put whatever we want back there.
The green room.
Easy.
This is just
green. They don't know if that isn't real.
This is all a green.
We're going to change out the exercise room back here into a studio.
No, it's got to, I don't want to get fat.
All right. I have a question. So you said location you build on the dial of Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a custom builder, like on your lot? Like we buy the lot and that's where you'll put on.
You do many estate projects.
Is that all you do? Or
No.
Do you actually put up neighborhoods?
Mm-hmm. Nah. We, Dave Siegel and I developed or finished Stone Ridge when it went out of business, custom home neighborhood. Dave Parrish and I back in 2001 developed Bristol Ridge. So over the years, we've done a few custom home developments. Not enough to keep us busy and to grow our business, you know. So we've gone up north and we build in Zionsville, Holiday Farms. I don't know if you've ever heard of Hinkey Development. They're an excellent company. They're wonderful people, and they've got, you know, just an awesome vision.
Optic development, man.
Oh, yeah. And they're so we got in with those guys, and we've been riding with them here because basically the business of developing custom homes became not profitable. On a large scale, like the last big one or one of the last big ones I remember, Precedent did Windermere.
Okay.
And they had production and custom, and they mixed it, and they were able to make it work. Hinkey's the only developer since Precedent, really, other than some small, you know, guys like me and Dave will put one up. That's happening all over, you know, small ones. But the big ones like Bridgewater and Carmel, Holiday Farms, golf course, huge communities. And he just put together the secret sauce, man. I don't know how he did it, because all the developers for custom guys kind of said, no, we're not. Yeah, we're too slow. We take too long. Lennar, come in and buy your 100 lots and write a check.
Yeah.
Like, and with me, you're going to sit here and sit on those lots for, well, I'm going to sit there for minimum 5 years. It might be 15.
Wow.
Depends on the market, especially, you know, out here in Hancock County, the larger homes move slower, and everybody wants, we want beautiful, big custom homes. Everybody does. But unfortunately, the cost and the amount of them you can build, I mean, it's the old pyramid, you know. There's only so many people that can afford those homes in our world. And so that's why there's so many less. But Hinkey, awesome that we built up there in a lot of his neighborhoods. And
Did you build a lot in Chatham Hills too, right?
No, I just did one in
there.
You only
did one in there?
Yeah. We could have gotten
neighborhood up there.
It was kind of already busy and full, and I really kind of am regretting that we didn't go in there, because now they're having the LIV tournament there. That's going to be the happiest place.
LIV tournament there?
Next year, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a big deal.
And will you go?
Omarama's right there. Oh, yeah, I'll go.
So that I probably will.
I would, man. That'd be
cool. I guess I'm not as offended by the whole LIV controversy as others.
I'm over it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go.
That's it. It's kind of like being mad about the split of Cart and Indy today. I'm over it.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
Okay. So now I'm a realtor, but to be honest, I've never helped anyone with a custom home.
Okay.
So please excuse my ignorance.
No.
So somebody finds a lot and they come to you and say, all right, I've got this lot in Brownsburg and I believe I'd like to put one of your houses on there.
Yes.
What comes next?
Okay. So the next thing we would do, a lot of times we would get involved even before they buy the lot.
Okay.
Which is a good thing, because
so the thought is they should come to you first and say, I'd like to build a house, and you
sure
work together to find a lot kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I can help them. I mean,
oh, that's good.
They got to decide on what.
You also have to know that you can get approved to build on that lot.
You're right.
Well, that, will a septic work? There's all kinds of due diligence that may need to happen, and that's what we're good at.
And this is
all the
probably going back to you saying, there's a lot more into buying that than you think.
I tell people all the time, don't go buy that lot because you may not be able to build what you want to build on that lot.
Exactly.
The county says no. I mean, we have a mutual friend who was a county councilman that spent 5 years trying to get approved to build the house he wanted to build on his land.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's definitely pieces of property out there that you go buy it and they won't let you build a house on for whatever reason. A septic won't work, or there's a big easement or something that you didn't know about. So, yeah, you could build a house on it, but not where you wanted. You know, so I always recommend to people, you know, my line is, hey, no cost, no commitment. Let me come out and look at your lot.
Okay.
You know, and that's how we start building a relationship with the customer. We take a look at it. We're like, yeah, you can do this, this, and this. Oh, we want that. No, you can't do that. Oh, okay. So, and then we'll do soil bores, get testing done. We're going to go through and do the due diligence and make sure. Now, if you find that perfect lot that you think you want, you'd be, you know, well advised to make an offer on the lot and get it tied up, but put contingencies on it. Like, hey, I'll buy it, but I got to make sure I can build what I want. I want to, you know, so you do contingencies on it.
Good to know.
Somebody doesn't beat you to it.
Gotcha.
And then, but then once that happens, really, as far as figuring out what you're going to build in the house, we got to, really a three-step process. We sign our first step would be the design agreement. We do an initial meeting, no cost, and we're going to show you a bunch of plans and here's how much it costs. And, you know, you're going to tell me a little bit about what you want. I'm going to say, hey, here's one kind of like it, you know, and this is about what it's cost. Because you don't want to sign a design agreement. It's $3,000. Basically what we do is we create a unique design. We're going to get you a budget, which is a budget range. and we're going to get you a site plan proving that the house that you want will fit, that we designed for you will fit on the lot.
Yeah. Oh, my garage is in the neighbor's yard.
That's what we're doing.
Is that going to be a problem?
That's a problem.
We don't want that problem.
But then we get those three deliverables done, and you should be where you're like, okay, this is going to work for me. Or, you know what? This isn't going to work for me. This is crazy. Goodbye. You know, when we part as friends. If we go on to the next step, you kind of think you're going to build a house with us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be...
Next step involves a plan, I would assume.
Yes, it does as well. And we price it per the job. They're usually between $20,000 and $30,000, and it would be your plans agreement.
Okay.
And during the plans agreement, we deliver the construction documents, the plot plan, because the plot plan, you need to really bid the job properly, especially on estate-type lots or big acreage. You need that plot plan because we got to go to the county and figure out exactly what are they going to make us do, right? I mean, they make you do things, right? And when you build a house, until you go to them and approach them with a drawing and say, is this good? Then you really don't know, for sure. You know, we know, but not to the penny. We want it to the penny. When we're pricing your house, we give you a price on it. We want to give it to you. So plans agreement, you get your construction documents, your plot plan. We like to do a landscape architect plan because we don't want to have your house drywalled and then like, hey, what were you thinking about for landscape?
I just need a bush or two.
Yeah. Or
tree over there.
I want Disney World in my backyard, you know,
and we haven't
prepared for it.
Right.
Well, even the house, like based on what you're doing in the backyard, I'm going to build your foundation differently. Oh,
right.
Oh, you're doing a sunken fire pit there with this.
You want?
I need to drop the brick ledge, you know. Right, so there's things that we do. So we tell people it's a big part, especially like at Holiday Farms and in the neighborhoods. You're required to do this quite a bit. So that's not something you can wait and think about later. We need to get that in your budget and make sure that we're going to meet the requirements of the neighborhood. So the again, construction docs, site plan, landscape architect plan. And then I have a selections coordinator, and she's going to take our clients around and go shopping on four big items, you know, the big ticket items, flooring and tile. Appliances, cabinets and countertops, home automation, lots of home automation, like smart home. And it can be like ridiculous. Like,
it is ridiculous.
That's our friend Alex.
But like blinds, people want these auto blinds.
Oh, yeah.
Push a button, you go to bed, you push good night, and all your blinds go down, all your TVs go off, all your lights go off, your alarm gets set, your garage doors get shut. Everything goes with one button, you know? So that's the kind of things that are handy.
I have that button. I have that button. You know what? I go, hey, Tony.
I bet that works.
It's a good thing.
That works about 10% of the time.
Yeah, it's crazy. And
I'm Brian, your Indianapolis realtor. If you are looking to buy or sell a house in the Indy area, I'm your guy. If you're coming from out of state, want to make a move to the Indy area, I'm your guy. Check out the show notes for a link. We can get in touch and get you started. Thanks for watching. Now back to the show.
And okay, so I know you've built some awesome homes. You did one of the first internet bank home shows, maybe a year.
Homerama. I did 2020 and 2022.
Okay, so the 2022 house, I believe it had an amazing gymnasium in it.
Yep.
And it had a really cool pool with like a pool bar at the edge of it.
Very nice home.
The kitchen was absolutely amazing. So what's the craziest thing you've had a customer say, I want you to put this in my house?
Live bullet shooting range.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we did it too. He called me. We just signed a contract like the day before. And he's like, hey, he calls me. He says, hey, come in my office. I want to talk to you. I got an idea. And he had it all laid out, marked out. He's like, right here, I think we can do it, you know. And I was in his basement. And I said, I think that's about the worst idea I've ever heard, you know, because I'm imagining some gun dropping and somebody getting shot.
Right.
And so we worked on about 6 months of research and got with several different companies, and we landed on one, and we had him come down and do all the ballistic panels, and we did the he did a hidden screen where the screen comes down and then his kids could play laser.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it was really neat. Had a projector that had bulletproofing on the projector. So that was cool. Yeah, you had to have air, you know, had to, because of the lead dust.
Yeah.
So you got to have negative, you know, where it's pulling it away from the gun. So we'd put in a big, but yeah, I think that was probably kind of one of the wildest things we ever did. Lots of ball courts. We're building probably 5 gymnasiums right now.
Yeah.
And we're only doing like 10 or 11 homes.
What?
So it's very golf simulators.
Yeah.
Almost every home, you know, if it gets up in that, you know, I'm going to say like a 6,000 and up house anymore. They've come down in price. I mean, they're just, it's nice, man. They don't take up too much space.
That's right.
A little, but it's cool.
I have a friend that when they built their office, they put a 25,000 gallon shark tank.
Ooh.
So when you came in the lobby, then.
Who did?
A friend of mine.
Oh, my God.
They owned a very large collection company, and they landed the deal to collect all of the Indiana Department of Revenue and student loans.
That kind of collection.
So they had collectibles.
No,
beer cans.
They were a
tequila bottle.
They collected bad debt. And when you walked in the office, the first thing you seen was a tank full of sharks.
Wow. That's great.
I need to have
him go if you don't pay.
Image.
I need to have him on the show.
Here's where we put the people that don't pay.
So, question for you.
Yes.
For someone who wants to build a custom home, construction loan, do you do them?
I do not.
Okay. But you know how they work.
Correct. Yes.
Can you explain kind of how that's different from somebody who gets just a conventional loan?
Yeah, it's the opposite. It's a backwards loan.
Okay.
That's the way I kind of explain it. You know, when you buy a house, you come in, you put down a down payment, we pay, you know, the seller for the house and the house is yours. And in this case, you're going to come in, you're going to have a calculated down payment of where you're going to be in the loan. And then a certain percentage is going to be drawn out to the builder to get started. And then the builder's going to get done at certain points, and we're going to prove that he finished up to that point, and then we're going to release another chunk of money to the builder to move to the next.
Draws.
They're called draws.
Yeah. Right?
And each draw is going to, in some cases, have maybe an appraiser look at it, sometimes an inspector, sometimes just the builder can submit. Sometimes it's things from the planning commission will be submitted to use that. And then sometimes there's different title recordings each time those draws are done.
Lien waivers
are done multiple times. And then at the end, when it's all done, usually there's a percentage held out for punch list items, and then a final close, and then a final payout. And
I think the biggest difference, though, is that the customer has to come up with their down payment up front.
Okay.
So they don't.
Oh, yeah. It's not at closing.
No.
Obviously, yeah.
They do close up front. The loan is closed.
Okay.
So when they go to
That makes sense.
It's built.
Yeah.
So the whole cost is based off an appraisal, which has been a huge challenge for the building industry and the appraisers. I feel sorry for those guys. I mean, they're doing their very best to work hard and do their job. And I think the rules are a little
against them.
Yeah. It's like they can't, they don't let them use like my pricing. If I have a customer and I turned in my pricing, they don't count it if it wasn't on the MLS for like a month or something.
Yep.
It has to be a legitimate for sale because they say, hey, it was never put on the open market. And I'm like, really? You're thinking I just name my price and people pay it? No, that's not how
it works.
My bid is on the open market. That customer is free to go get prices from whoever they want, and they do. So, like, the fact that they're saying it's not legit because it hasn't gone through the free market is, I don't agree with that, but I kind of see their point, too, you know, that it was a smaller market. When you put it up on the MLS, well, that's the market in their opinion, but, I mean, the whole process of someone looking for a custom home builder and getting couple prices many times, 2 and 3. I mean, that there should be some consideration. Like maybe you need 2 of those for every one of the others or something. I'm saying they need to give it some weight because you go into new neighborhoods and there's nothing there. And the we all know costs just keep going up. So
Right. You're
always behind.
Right.
You know, you may not be able to, and Hancock County is really tough, or Shelby County. You know, we've looked at big, beautiful homes there, and they're $400,000 or $500,000 short on appraisals. It's like, man, we're not even getting that. You know, if we build it for free, we couldn't build it for what you said it would appraise. Which I understand. They're saying, well, that means it's not worth that. Well, it was to them.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't get it for any less.
That's the hardest part about appraisal. Well, not the hardest.
It's a little bit of a conundrum.
It sucks. Yeah.
Hard part about everything, though. Right. You know, you look at, especially in the luxury category.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. In the luxury category, you know, it's worth what someone goes and pays for it.
Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't mean you're going to be able to resell it for that.
It doesn't mean the bank's willing to loan you that.
Right. Because the biggest fear for the bank is, If I can't sell it for that, I don't want it.
Right.
And what's crazy, the mentality of, well, I put $1 million down on that $2 million house. The bank make $1 million. No, the bank has the limits for having a bad loan. They don't want your house.
They don't want it back.
They don't want the house.
Right.
They don't want it if you got a loan for $1 and it's a.
If you put half down, you probably don't have a problem though.
Exactly.
You know, you're going to pay that loan off. If you paid half down, you're good.
Well, yeah. If you think of the loan, you would think.
You think it's $1 million down. Yeah.
The loans that went bad.
You're right.
Yeah, yeah. But the loans that went bad were no money down.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, man, I got.
It wasn't the guys that put 50% down.
No. I got on my house, but I put $2,000 down on that car.
You can have the house.
I'm not losing my $2,000. That was the mentality back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
So, do you have to answer something?
I did.
Okay.
I'm maintaining business while we do business. It's crazy.
That's amazing.
Way to go.
But no, I feel it's going pretty good right now. I mean, things are kind of, I think it's going to be okay here for a while.
So
I do too.
In your business, you have a portfolio of home designs that you recommend to people?
No.
Okay.
That's kind of the difference between custom and production.
Yeah. My question was going to be like, is there a minimum square footage of a house you would build and a max or?
Not on money or on size. We don't care. I think we get rooted out because of the way we build them. If somebody's wanting to be at 500, you know, for a 2,500 square foot, one story home, we can't do that. That's 200 a foot, you know, and we're more like 300 to 400. We just priced one. I was like 650, but it was really a huge, massive mansion, you know, that had everything under the sun in it. But the 300 to 350, you know, on the production, you might be 175, 185, somewhere in there, you know,
because they're putting those up.
Well, they buy better.
Right.
They
buy more
expensive materials in them. The homes are extremely efficient. So you said, do we have a portfolio of plans that we show people? No. For the design agreement, that's what we're providing. I have a guy that works for me that's a 40-year designer. He went to architectural school. He's been designing custom homes his entire career.
Nice.
And he's amazing. You know, it's like you'll sit there and talk to him for an hour, hour and a half. His name's Grady McIntyre. But you sit there and talk to him. Hi, Grady.
Hey, Grady.
You sit there and talk to Grady, and he just asks you questions. Hey, where are you thinking you want your primary?
And he's building that in his mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, he's just writing down notes, and he's got, like, he doesn't have a list of questions or a questionnaire that he goes through. It's just all up here, and he's just asking the pretty much. You know, I sit with him in tons of meetings, so I know the I know the routine, you know, obviously I should. But, and then he'll come back in, like, 2.5 weeks with a house, and I will say that it's like 98, 95%. I mean, there's always 100% of the time there's, hey, I don't like that door there. Make it a little bigger. But as far as the big boxes, like he sticks it, like, and it's like magic to me because that's not me. I'm the get it done guy.
You're going to build it.
Yeah. I can get it done and bring all the people together to get it to happen and all that. But man, he just does that. I'm just always amazed. You know, I really appreciate it. And it's very cool.
So, in a given year, how many homes do you build?
About, you know, like when during 2021, we got up there, you know, 18, 20, you know, for a couple years, which was not good. We're 12, you know, our average though will be like 2.8 this year on the average. We got one going. It's a great big one. So, you know, that drives that average up. But we got some in the, you know, the 1.2, 1.3 range, you know, but hardly any under $1 million. But we do renovations as well. We do big renovations, mainly whole houses. We don't really like to go in and, I mean.
So you're not going to come put a sunroom on my backyard, back porch?
He didn't come put a barn.
You, Brian.
He didn't come put a barn on my house either.
I do. We're always doing
that was four or five, by the way.
We're always doing four or five renovations, and I call it for friends at Carrington Homes. You know, it's either that past customer, hey, Carl, would you come finish my bonus room? Yes, immediately. Would you come put, we're getting ready to go down all the way to Bartersville to put a, finish out a little office area in a barn. And it's for a customer that I finished their home in 2009.
Right.
Seriously.
That's going the extra mile. We talk about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You got to. You're going to tell them no and make them go call somebody they don't know. They've trusted me to do everything, including closing their pool, putting the tennis court net up, getting the refrigerator out of the pool bar and putting it inside so it doesn't freeze every year for a decade or more, you know, for more than 15 years now.
Yeah.
Brian just got the level of homes we're talking about because he said tennis court.
Yeah.
Well, he said Bargersville
at the pool bar.
Bargersville's my people.
Oh, man, I love Bargersville. It's a great place.
I taught for 20 years in Center Grove, so I'm very familiar with that.
I painted the locker room when I was 19 at Center Grove High School.
That's awesome. I painted the band room at Perry High School a few years ago.
Oh,
I was in the band.
Oh, yeah. We did, I was working down there when they were remodeling back, I don't know what year that was, about 88.
I'll say at this point, I'm sure they have a new updated.
Oh, yeah, that's probably another room.
So you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to. We'll cut it out. Most expensive, biggest house you've ever built?
I mean, the biggest is probably in that 2018 to 20,000 feet.
Wow.
18.
In Indiana?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Holy smokes.
There's a bunch of them.
There's quite a few, yeah. But
11,000.
You know, the price thing, I mean, they just vary, you know. It doesn't. Yeah. It's really not fair to say, but because the ones I did years ago were really more expensive, maybe, than some we're doing today, but they cost less because of time. So,
right, sure.
I don't feel, you know.
And you could put up really big house that costs less than a small house, but because the small house has more expensive,
stuff.
Elaborate stuff, it jacks up the price.
Well, in reason, that's 100% true. That's why when we give people in our design agreement, when we give them a price, I used to give them an exact price.
Hmm.
Like, I would ask them a bunch of questions. I'm like, okay, it's, you know, $559,068 or whatever. And I'm like, well, you know, we were wrong 100% of the time. We never gave anybody a right price, not one time. And I was like, wait a minute. And somebody, it wasn't me that thought of it, but somebody else said, you know, hey, let's do a range.
Range.
You know, it'll be between here and there. And I'm like, brilliant. We can never be wrong again.
You were hired.
Yeah. When I did this edition, that's what I kept talking to Dave about stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, how much do you think this will cost? And Dave's numbers, well, Dave and Kurt Huff, right?
Yeah.
Both of them are like, I'm going to redo the bathroom. How much is that? And Dave's like, $38,000. And Kurt's like, $125,000. They're like, every number's like, what are you putting in the bathroom? Like, yeah. Trump's gold toilet?
That urinal is very expensive.
The urinal was expensive. But they kept going, whatever you think it is, it'd add 20%. And Dave's like, 30%. And then Kurt's like, yeah, you're right, 45%.
And these are your friends?
Yeah, they're my friends, and they weren't wrong.
I used to be good at guessing prices, but I'm out. You know, it's just, we quit that. You want to know? Well, I'm going to have to figure it up for you.
Right.
You know, I have to get you a price. That's our favorite line. Hey,
right.
We'll get you a price.
Yeah, it's
you can't shoot numbers because you're wrong.
And they change all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like me sometimes answering mortgage guidelines. Well, yesterday I could do this, but let me find out what I can do today.
Exactly. Yeah. They change it so often. You got to be careful.
So I know there's one other tie-in I want to bring into this that Brian doesn't know.
Oh, okay.
The racing tie-in.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
we have another sprint car racing tie-in right here.
Yep.
I'm not at all involved. He just keeps bringing on people who are somehow race-oriented.
Racing related. We all know each other.
I brought in Jake Query, which wasn't associated, but
Jake Query was a racing guy. He's one of the Turn 3 voice of the Indianapolis 500.
Oh, wow. Cool.
He was, he was on our show last week. So.
Oh, man. That's super cool.
Yeah. So you're in good company.
Man, no kidding. I'm feeling a lot more important already.
you're already important.
I don't know about that.
So your racing background comes in sprint cars, right?
Yep. My son, I had a guy working for me, and he said, hey, I'm wanting to do a little room addition on my house. Can I get some lumber on your account? You know, he was a superintendent working for me, and I was like, well, sure, yeah, no problem. He's like, hey, instead of paying you back, I got this little quarter midget. I'm like, what's a quarter midget? I had no idea because he, you know, of course, you know, I had a boy, a son, and which wouldn't matter, girl or boys race. But he's like, is it like a yard car? You know, they ride around the street or what? No, you got to go to the racetrack and everything.
Yeah, this is a racing race car.
This is a racing race car. And so, yeah, I had always loved racing. I had done a little bit of like drove a midget, a Kenyan car, and I had always loved just driving and stuff. So. That kind of was like, yeah, let's go check it out, you know. Woo! That was
that lumber cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Every bit of it. Yeah. But man, what a great, great life for my kid. And you know, I know you guys did motocross, and so just the best times of our life, literally.
Yeah.
Like, man, we spent family time and just like you know, we had the best times and the worst. If you've ever raised.
At the same time.
And the same day.
With the same people. Like, yeah, it's absolutely amazing.
Winning and losing, man. And that's what I liked about racing for my son was it does teach you how to lose, you know, and how to fight through it and keep going and get crashed in the middle of a race. Now, some kids, they just crumble. Some kids get tougher when they get wrecked, you know? Yeah. And so the lot of laughs.
Break their femur and want to go back out there.
Yeah. Some people wreck those that wreck them.
Yeah, they do. And there's consequences to that too.
Absolutely.
You know, so it was a great, I think it produced a good human, you know, all the people that they got their,
there's some douchebags and everything.
They got their, yeah. Yeah. But they, for the most part, it creates really good people.
Racing people go help racing people. Like, you could break apart, and the guy that wants to beat you more than anybody is the first guy.
Yeah,
and he's the first guy bringing you parts.
Oh, every time.
Because I don't want to beat you because you broke down.
Yeah.
Like, I want to beat you because you're on the track, so I can help you get on the track. So I think one of the things in it is when you're on a team sport and you lose, there may be that guy that was crossing the line to score a touchdown and throws the ball down a little bit too early and through the back of the field. And
who would ever
blame him for losing? But when you lost because you lost,
you got to own it.
You freaking lost.
Yeah.
You can't say, you know, I played the best game of my life and we lost because of him.
The cool thing about that sprint car, too, is that setup is a lot. Means a lot.
Means
a lot. So I was as responsible for losing as him.
I hated that part.
Sometimes it's all my fault. It's like, you know, didn't do something right and he had to pull off the track or whatever. So, and then sometimes he'd make a bonehead move. So it gave us a chance to forgive each other and move on, you know, and that was a good lesson too, is that, hey, you know, sometimes you're going to mess up. I'm going to have to suffer those consequences, but we rise and fall together, you know, is kind of the lesson.
Yeah.
So it was good.
You know, one time we were racing a Redbud and Blake was on a 60 and he fried the clutch in the first practice. And he was known for riding the clutch pretty hard.
So yeah.
I gave him a hard time. I changed the clutch and he went out and run practice. He fried the clutch in the first moto.
Jeez.
I was furious.
Yeah.
I yelled at him. I threw the bike into the back of the trailer. I didn't even strap it down. And he was young. I mean, he cried half the way home from Red Bull, a four-hour drive. And I'd even clean it out that night. The next day, I pulled everything out, picked the bike up off the floor, start cleaning it out, and realized his clutch cable was frayed.
Oh.
So when he was letting
do it,
he didn't even do it. And I apologized to him, and I said, I will never raise my voice to you about racing ever again. And I didn't. I wasn't the one jumping the jumps and risking my life. And and you're right. I screwed that up.
Yeah.
And I yelled at him for it, you know. And
right.
There's such this bonding out of all of that in racing that I'm sure you get it.
He had our ball. You shouting matches here and there, but not too many, you know. You always kind of, I mean, you get big disappointments, but you just got to move on, man, because you're getting ready to get in that next race.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have much time to sit there and mope, you know. You got to get pulled bootstraps up and go again real soon.
Oh, as many times I looked at Blake and said, you know what? You pick that helmet up and you're hungry, so quit yelling at me.
The boy gets a little hangry.
Exactly.
Man.
Yeah, it was good. We tried it again here about 3 years ago. Guy that was working for me, good friend, Eric, and he had a full sprint car team, wing sprint car team, because we always ran non-wing. Indiana's non-wing. It's really, the other than California, the only place in the country that they really race very many non-wing sprint cars. And everywhere else it's wing, so we're like, okay, we're going to – Eric had the wing car, so we went and raced, but it just wasn't the same, you know, as when you were young and you – I mean, it's just
– And when it's your kid, it's different too.
It was my kid. He was
racing.
Yeah, he came and we kept doing it, but I wasn't wrenching the car. Eric's a much better mechanic than I am. It was his car. And,
right.
But that was kind of part of what I like to do, even if we lost. Even if I was worse at it, I want to do it, you know.
I liked it when Kurt wrenched on my bike. He was good at it. I wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Carl, I know this is a late evening for you. You've probably worked all day, and I really appreciate your friendship, and I truly appreciate you taking your time out to do this. And And, you know, really, I know the quality of what you do, and I appreciate what you do and what you put behind what you do.
So, yeah, thank you. You guys are doing a great job here. This is really cool, man. Thank you very much for having me. Seriously.
Glad you could share. I learned a lot today, and I really appreciate it. Yeah, good. For sure.
Hopefully somebody
else. He's looking for a $2.8 million custom home buyer that he can bring your way.
That'd be fine, too. Yeah.
Hey, we'll pay you.
This is great. We'll discuss that. All right. Well, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button and leave us a comment. If you're listening to us on whatever the heck you're listening to, leave us a comment as well. We appreciate it, Brad.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Don't forget to go by CarringtonHomes.com, right? That's your...
Yeah.
And then also you can find Carrington Homes on Facebook, and there's some great pictures.
Amazing pictures, yeah.
We're always working on them, trying to get better.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah. Awesome. Till next time, real estate makes us drink. Cheers.
Thank you.